Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is a Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Matt Catrillo here with you again for today and for the rest of this week, filling in for Sean Carey. Steve Jones coming up soon from the Sunbury Motors Studios. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Be sure to follow the show on Twitter at Steve Jones PSU. We're on Facebook at Steve Jones Show, and we're also at stevejonesshow.com. On those three avenues, you can find the latest Penn State news and notes, sporting news and notes, breaking news, and all the latest show archives as well, whatever you miss. You can also find all the latest show archives on Google Play and iTunes as well, so check those out on Facebook, Twitter, Google Play, iTunes, and stevejonesshow.com. So we're ready for a big show here once again today. At 4:35 today, we're going to be joined, as promised, by Harry Mays of 97.5 The Fanatic in Philadelphia. Great guys, lot of fun on the show. He's one of the co-hosts of the midday show on The Fanatic. And a lot to talk about with him for Philadelphia sports. You start with the 76ers and what's transpired with the aftermath of the Brian Colangelo fallout, as the Sixers now look for a new GM, Brett Brown, in charge as of right now on the interim basis while that process goes on. But meanwhile, you get ready for the NBA draft, which is less than 2 weeks away, unbelievably. And the Sixers have had a couple of different workouts. Mikal Bridges from Michigan State was in today. We had talks about Tony Carr, maybe possibly a good spot for the Sixers to take, maybe in the second round. We talked about that with Jeremy Wu yesterday of Sports Illustrated. And that's also online at stevejonesshow.com or on Google Play or iTunes. So we'll talk to Harry Mays about that, where the Sixers go from here, what's the fan base kind of like, the mindset right now in Philadelphia with that. And also the Eagles, they are in mandatory minicamp. They just began that today. They received their Super Bowl rings on Thursday, and then Doug Peterson said in his press conference today, moving on, we got to put it to bed. So, of course, always lots to talk about with the Eagles. One injury note to pass along from that is the 2016 second-round pick, Sidney Jones, who sat out last year after tearing his Achilles at his pro day last year when the Eagles were looking at him, a bunch of other NFL teams. He did not practice last week, and he did not practice today, so we'll have to keep an eye on that. Not exactly sure what's going on there. Not sure if it's soreness or the Eagles are just holding him out or what's going on there. So perhaps we'll get some knowledge there from Harry Mays. And, of course, we go to the Phillies as they come off an off day yesterday, and they begin a three-game set at Citizens Bank Park tonight against the struggling Colorado Rockies as well. First pitch at 7:05, coverage at 6:30 on WKOK tonight. It's John Gray against Aaron Nola on the hill. And a favorable pitching matchup for the Phillies, of course. Aaron Nola having a nice season so far, 7-2, 2.35 ERA. Facing a kid in John Gray who's 6-6 this year, 5.66 ERA. The Rockies struggled a lot at home, and maybe a change of scenery could help them as they actually begin a six-game road trip tonight in Philly. So we'll see. But the Phillies, of course, they need to get a string of wins together as well, as they've really struggled out of the gate from that 10-game road trip, 3-7. Things didn't go well this weekend against the Brewers, losing 2 out of 3. They got clobbered on Friday and Saturday, found a way to squeak out a win on Sunday, and now they begin this three-game set with the series with the Rockies in this series, which is actually kind of critical for the Phillies because you have the Brewers looming again, but this time in Milwaukee next weekend. And both these teams kind of crawling around 500 right now. The Rockies a little bit further back in the NL West, which has been weak, but the NL East hasn't been that much better. The Phillies still find themselves only three games back, so we'll see where things stand there. We'll talk to Harry Mays about that. And also, too, I'd be curious if Steve asked Harry this today, and a possible problem that could be looming here with Mikel Franco. And really, he really hasn't been as advertised since the Phillies brought him up. So I think, Steve, as we bring in now here to the show, that there's something looming here, because you look at that lineup from the Phillies game on Sunday, Michael Franco was not in that, and J.P. Crawford, who just came off the DL, was placed at third base, and he had a pretty good day. And then you had Scott Kingery still in the lineup, as he should be, because he's had a hot bat. But the fact that Franco was not in the lineup and you had to move J.P. Crawford to third base, I think that says a lot. But a lot to talk about with Harry Mace today on the show.
Well, I think that when you look at Franco, when Franco came up, had an initial burst. And after his initial burst, everybody got a book on him. This is why I've tried to caution everybody with the Pirates deal about Austin Meadows. Like, Meadows is going to be like, no. Wait till they get a book on him. When they get a book on him, then you're going to have a feel as to whether he's a long-term solution or not. That's why it's, you know, I think that's what's got to be scary for the Phillies about, for example, Rhys Hoskins. Because Rhys Hoskins got off to a great start last year, and then, of course, he has struggled at times this year. Again, once they get a book on you, what's your hot spot, cold spot? Where do we shift you? How do we play you? Now it's up to the player, with help from coaching, to respond. Well, Michael Franco, remember, he got off to a great start, Matt. And once they got a book on him, he really has not adjusted back.
Not at all. Let's
take Cesar Hernandez. Cesar Hernandez has been steady Eddie ever since they brought him up. So he's always been able to adjust. He's been good.
And you look at Franco's numbers in roughly the last 10 games or so, about a 184 batting average, a home run and only four RBIs, and he's committed six errors already this season.
Well, and I thought that with more help around him, namely Rhys Hoskins, that would take some pressure off of him as to being the guy that has to produce the runs. All right, now you got some pressure off, you got some help around you, you can relax and play ball. Hasn't happened that way. There is only a certain length of time you can go with somebody. And Crawford's not going to bring the power to third base that you need. In fact, I don't think Crawford's a very good offensive player. I mean, Crawford didn't show me much offense in AAA, and he hasn't shown me much offense at this level.
Agreed.
But then again, the Phillies have not shown a lot of offense in 3 weeks. Look, everybody goes through slumps. Teams go through slumps. And my goodness, I mean, fortunately for the Red Sox last night, the Orioles are just not very good. They didn't score a run for 11 innings, won the game. You have a lot of teams in that boat right now. There just are not many dominant teams out there. I mean, the Yankees are playing 700 ball, which is mind-blowing. But we have gone to the era of really, really good teams, no great teams.
And I think part of the issue with that, Steve, and this is a problem that the Phillies in particular have been having, is you have guys at the plate that are trying to swing for the fences, and you're seeing much more strikeouts now than home runs, and that's not good for baseball. Small ball is quickly diminishing, I think.
It's died. I think it's got RIP on it at the moment, because the three results you are primarily seeing, and it's not completely true. I mean, you still see manufactured runs. But the biggest problem Major League Baseball has, and we've talked about it before, is the ball is not in play often enough. And because it's not in play often enough, it then lessens action. Because the three primary results now appear to be walk, strikeout, home run. And that's not what baseball needs, and that's how the Phillies are playing. Now, part of this is a direct result as to what analytics tell you. And they want uppercut swings. But I've said it once, I've said it a thousand times, that if I need the Manhattan Project taken care of, I will call some Ivy League people. When it comes to baseball, I want baseball people. You can crunch all the numbers you want, and I think numbers are valuable. Numbers are valuable in a lot of things that you do. But to me, numbers are supporting. They should not be primary. They should be supporting to what your hypothesis happens to be. Ryan Howard, of course, after the Achilles, he was never the same. But they shifted him into a permanent slump after he came back. That, you know, and that's analytics comes into play. That's just smart. Okay, this is where the guy hits the ball. All right. But all this, you know, exit velocity. It cleared the fence. I assume it was hit hard. I really don't care about your exit velocity. Don't care. We hear about spin rate. Now, if I'm a pitching coach, I do want to know spin rate. Okay? As a fan, I could give a darn. Okay? If I'm managing, I may, you know, let's take Charlie Morton. Charlie Morton is a pitcher who's one of his key out pitches happens to be that curveball of his. And he's third in the majors in spin rate, which is that tumble down. So if his spin rate lessens up, that means the pitch is flatter. So if I'm a pitching coach, I do need to know that. Okay? War. Wins against replacement. Oh, that's a very important stat. Oh, really? It is? It's a really important stat? Not really. It's a completely irrelevant stat. All right? Mike Trout exits the lineup. Guess what? I don't think the guy replacing him is as good. Okay? I don't need to be a genius to know that. And what do analytics stress? Analytics stress strikeouts, walks, home runs. So, that's the kind of team you get. Simple as that. And that's the way almost everybody's playing it. They're filling out lineups. They're helping to determine batting orders.
And we might be losing this shift now soon, too. I don't know if you saw that.
Well, do they want to outlaw it? I didn't see it. Do they want to outlaw it?
They want to outlaw it and get rid of it.
Oh, no.
Which, I don't understand that. I mean, I guess if you're seeing guys constantly striking out, you were talking about not enough balls in play, but at the same time, you're going to take away a key strategy for teams, for guys that don't know how to hit the opposite, how to hit the opposite way. I mean, you can't. To me, you can't. That kills the integrity of the game somewhat, too, again.
But remember, every sport has restrictions in it. Okay, every sport has restrictions in it. You have only 8 seconds in the NBA to get the ball across the timeline, 10 seconds in college basketball. There's a shot clock. You got to get a shot off in 30 seconds in college, 24 in the pros. You have a technical foul for illegal defense in the NBA. In the NHL, they worked like the devil to get rid of the New Jersey Devils center ice trap because it was restricting scoring. They eliminated the penalty for a two-line pass. Now you're seeing stretch passes out of the zone. In football, five guys on the offensive side are not allowed to go out as pass receivers and catch the football. So there's restrictions in every sport. Yeah, on an onside kick, you got five on one side, five on the other.
I just think this strategy, though, Steve, is just so mostly common used by all 30 teams of the MLB, where some of those examples you mentioned are can be used by in different ways by different teams. I think this is fairly common that where all MLB teams use it, and now all of a sudden you're going to dump it.
Well, they want to get rid of it because they think it's choking offense. They want balls in play. They want action. So they're trying to restrict like I said, in football, five guys are not allowed to go out for a pass. That's been an accepted restriction from day one, so there's no thought process put behind that. Because when we all grew up, that's the way the rule has been since day one. Okay. Baseball, they started putting shifts in, and when they started putting them in, there was no restriction against it. The only thing you cannot do is that you cannot, except for the catcher, line up in foul territory. That's a balk. That's the one thing you can't do. Because, I mean, there's already a restriction in baseball. In other words, if you're sitting there and Nick Williams is playing right field, Nick Williams cannot line up in foul territory in Oakland. Because Oakland has a huge, expansive foul territory. And you got a dead pole hitter up. And so you may want to take your left fielder and put him in left center, your center fielder in right center, and you may want to put Nick Williams maybe a couple feet into foul territory. Can't do it. It's a balk. So they already have restrictions in the game as to where you're allowed to line up. So it's not as if it doesn't exist. That's why under the old rule, ask yourself, under the old rule, because now you just put up four fingers and the guy goes down to first base. Why wasn't it in the old rule that the catcher just didn't stand out and make the catch? He had to stay in the box and couldn't leave the box until the pitcher released the ball. Because it's a balk. So this has been bandied about. The first guy I heard or read about restricting shifts was Tom Verducci from Sports Illustrated, the Penn State grad. And you can, to me, if you draw that mythical line up the middle, okay, here's another one, okay? Runners on first base. Okay, if you throw beyond a 45-degree angle on the mound to first base as a left-handed pitcher, it's a balk. See, there are already restrictions about where you can, can't go, can't run inside the baseline. You get hit with the ball, you're out, or it's interference. You can only line up in the batter's box where the chalk is. Can't stand on the plate, for example, and say, okay, you know, hit me. I'm going to get my base. You know, it's not as if some of these things don't already exist. And they may just draw the mythical line up the middle where suddenly, let's say J.P. Crawford's playing shortstop, maybe he lines up right behind the bag. He's just not allowed to go to the other side of the bag to line up. You're still pretty close in the neighborhood, aren't you? But I want to say offensively, this is the part offensively that has really bothered me in watching games with the shift. And that's this. Why the heck aren't you bunting? I'll give you a good example. I'm watching Jackie Bradley Jr. the other night, who is as fine a defensive outfielder as you're going to see out there. And he had one really good season at the plate. Other than that, he's really struggled at the plate in his career. They're playing, I think it was Houston. He's a left-handed hitter. And he's a left-handed hitter, Matt, with speed. My goodness, every single time in that game he should have come up and dropped a bunt.
Absolutely.
Okay, every time you keep dropping bunts until they say, okay, well, look, we got to play him standard. We can't do this. He's going to drop a bunt. I don't understand why I don't see more guys just get up and bing, drop a bunt.
Ryan, you circle it back to the Phillies. They have actually plenty of speed in that lineup with all the young guys that they should be able to pull stuff off like that and use some of that small ball to their advantage.
Even with no speed. There's nobody over there. The third baseman's playing shortstop. The third baseman's playing shortstop. If you want to defeat shifts with guys that pull the ball, have them drop a bunt and keep dropping a bunt and keep dropping a bunt and do it until the other team looks around and says, we can't do anything. We're going to have to line up straight. They're going to keep dropping bunts on us. And nobody does it. I mean, Jackie Bradley Jr. is hitting 190. Drop three bunts. Get the 202. Come on. You can do it. I mean, you don't have to have speed to do it. I was at a Red Sox-Royals game one day, right? And they put the shift on for David Ortiz, and he dropped a bunt. And yes, he beat it out. And the ballpark gave him a standing ovation. Drop. I mean, and it's not just the ability to hit the other way. Just drop a bunt. You don't even have to be precise with the darn thing. The third baseman's playing shortstop. Oh. Well, I'm sure there's some analytics saying we don't want you bunting either. So it's like, oh, we can't bunt.
That's a whole other discussion. I think analytics are bad for baseball, too, which I think is why we're in this discussion as well.
Look, if you go through a month and you drop 12 successful bunts for base hits, they are not going to shift you anymore because they can't afford to. They can't afford to.
Analytics is making teams overthink. That's what's wrong with analytics in sports, not just in baseball, all of sports.
And no one has ever accused this show of that. Back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right. Great. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And Matt Leon is going to join us. We're going to talk with him in just a few moments because we now believe that it was a coup d'etat with the Sixers and that Matt's actually the one making the choice, but we'll talk to him about that in a second. First of all, let's get to this day in sports history. And on this day in sports history, they claim that on this day in 1839 that Abner Doubleday invented the sport of baseball. Now, there are also some that say Alexander Cartwright did or whatever, but it should be pointed out that the Hall of Fame is in Cooperstown, and they're going to go with that. Now, there is some evidence that surfaced that indicates the game of baseball actually may have been played before 1800. 1939, 100 years after Abner Doubleday allegedly created baseball, the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum was dedicated in Cooperstown. Now, Babe Ruth was a part of the initial class, but he was not the leading vote getter. The leading vote getter was Ty Cobb. 1948, Ben Hogan won his first U.S. Open. 1967.
Taking your calls at
1967, the Washington Senators beat the Chicago White Sox 6-5 in 22 innings. The games lasted 6 hours, 38 minutes, ended at 2:43 in the morning, which caused the American League to adopt a curfew rule stating that no inning may start after 1 a.m. 1981, Major League Baseball players began a 49-day strike. The issue was free agent compensation. There's a shock. Wayne Gretzky Hart Trophy, MVP 1985. Bulls won their first championship on this date, beat the Lakers in 5 games. 1997, interleague play began in baseball, ending a 126-year tradition of separating the major leagues until the World Series. And that is this day in sports history. All right, we do believe that deep down it was a coup d'etat, and that Matt Leon is now going to be the one drafting. All right, so we'll take a break. Matt, in a moment, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. And I think we have now established our connection with Matt Leon from KYW in Philadelphia. The person that we believe deep down is the de facto general manager of the Phillies in what we believe was an A2 Brute moment. Matt?
Confirm nor deny, and you can't prove anything.
I feel like now I'm watching a scene from Mission Impossible. And I serve at the pleasure of the secretary. All right. So, well, So the Brian Colangelo deal, which was bizarre to begin with, how much more bizarre did it come with his explanation of it?
The whole thing was, I mean, I just the eye test I find it hard to believe that his wife could be that active with that level of knowledge of information and he have no knowledge of it. It just, you know, I don't know if you'll be able to prove that, but the whole thing just top to bottom. It's one of those, like, when I first read that or first got an inkling on that story, a heads up on that story, I figured, oh, this is too, you know, fantastical. This has to be exaggerated. It has to be somebody with an agenda. And then you kind of read it and you read how, you know, kind of well informed it is and the length they go to, and you're like, wow, this is really something. And it's really kind of depressing that the leader of a major sports organization has this kind of time on it.
Yeah.
You know, and then you throw the whole thing with his wife and you're like, wow, this is bizarre even for Philadelphia.
I mean, you want to talk about, I mean, he threw her clearly under the bus.
Well, I think one thing we've learned with the Colangelo family over the years is taking responsibility is not real high up on the depth chart. So,
yeah.
You know, I wouldn't want to be at Thanksgiving this year. Might be a little awkward.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right. Now what do they do? It's not as if we're not, I mean, it's the off season, sort of. There's a draft coming up a week from Thursday. Oh, and by the way, free agency opens up 9 days after that. So it's a very active time for them. So what are they? How's it being handled now? And what's the process like to get a permanent GM?
Brett Brown's the point person now, the head coach. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think Brett Brown is the type of guy who, when he sits down with people, either, you know, potential draft picks, agents, whatever, has to kind of poo-poo, like, okay, well, that's not a part of us anymore, so you're dealing with me, and, you know, we're all good. I think they're in a great situation to have somebody like Brett Brown to kind of steer the ship of state here until they get somebody new in place. I do not think they're going to have a hard time filling this job. This is a prime opportunity. I mean, I don't think they're going to get someone in before the draft, obviously, next Thursday or even before the agency starts, but everyone's going to take their phone call for this opportunity. So, and in an interesting way, in the world we live in, and the way the NBA, you know, actually having an opening there going into free agency could kind of be a good thing, because I don't think it would be the craziest thing to sit down with LeBron James and say, LeBron, if you had your way, who would you like to see in that chair? And, you know, not necessarily you definitely go in that direction, but you maybe get an idea of what somebody like LeBron James, if you are serious about bringing him to Philadelphia, which I think they are, you know, kind of get his feel for his thoughts on that opening. And in a strange way, it could work to their advantage because they have the money to make anything happen they want to make happen. They have two young stars that I think just about everybody in the league would want to play next to. They've got a lot of selling points. You've got the circus has left town now, and I think that won't do any damage as far as what they're trying to do this offseason. But I'll be interested to see a timeline of when they think they're going to get somebody in place there. It's very possible it could happen after everything, and Brett Brown just kind of handles things with regards to the draft and at least the front end of free agency.
And a lot of people may not realize the owner of the Sixers is a multi-billionaire, and so they're not short on cash.
No, not at all. And they're in a good cap spot too because they've been so young. So they can do what they want. You know, if they want to go all in with somebody, and you know, they can go dollar for dollar with anybody. They're in a really, really advantageous spot. I think a lot of people would love to play for Brett Brown and to play next to Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. I think the franchise winning a playoff series, you know, that got them some cachet as far as really being an ascending team and not just kind of a younger team on the that's got some talent. I think they showed that they are, you know, a couple of steps away. And you know, LeBron James, or even to a lesser extent, a Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, they could accelerate that process and move them really close to the top of the mountain. Because if you're assuming LeBron's going to leave Cleveland, who knows what's going to happen in Toronto after they fizzled out, fired the coach and all. Boston, obviously, is the favorite. But then I think you go right to this. And so the dynamic in the conference is changing. And it's going to be an interesting next month or so for the Sixers. I think we're going to hear a lot of interesting stories. Not interesting like, you know, my wife's ripping players on Twitter interesting, but interesting like who could be coming to town.
Does a story like this do any damage, or is it the way they handled it just really eliminated damage?
I think there was some damage done, some eye-rolling, because it took so long for it to happen. And I get on one hand that if you bring in a law firm to do a, you know, to do an investigation, and you want to wait for them to do the investigation, and there's also a, you know, a legality point that you want to have kind of all your ducks in a row if you are going to make a move on making a move. But it just kind of hung out there for so long, and it was really, you know, people – Sixers fans and reporters on Twitter kind of figured it out within 24 hours what was, for the most part, going on here. So I think that hurt in the short run, but I think it's already kind of blown over. Like, you know, now that Colangelo is out, you know, everybody's kind of moved on, and now it's, you know, it's kind of like the Adult Swim, and now everybody's kind of focused on, you know, what they're going to do. So I don't think it, you know, maybe a little bit of an eye roll, but in the big picture, you know, it's nothing more than a humorous footnote.
Let's go to the bizarre suggestion of the day. Do you bring Sam Hinkie back?
you could make the argument, and I wouldn't have any problems with it. I don't think it would happen. I just think there's too much baggage there on both sides. And I don't think this ownership group would be comfortable with doing that again. Would be fascinating, though. It would really be fascinating. But I think it's more likely you're going to see someone probably maybe a little more mainstream thinking. But I, you know, me personally, I would love to see it. I think it would be a phenomenal story. And it would be kind of similar to the, you know, in a way, what the Eagles did. They had Howie Roseman making the decisions. They shelved him, and now he didn't leave. You know, he just moved down the hall to the opposite end of the building. But then they brought him back and won the Super Bowl. And you could make the same circuitous route for the Sixers here if they were to do that. But I would put the chances of that at about 5-10%.
Just one quick note. Your thoughts on the Phillies, who at least have broken out of that awful offensive slump where they hit only 205 over 16 games?
Yeah, they won on Sunday, which is the bottom line, but I wouldn't even say they broke out. They got four hits. They scored their four runs, I think, on two ground balls, a sac fly, and a walk. So
yeah,
they're still – getting Hoskins back helps, and he hit a homer in his first game back. I think it was Saturday or Friday, and I still think they're going to hit. I think when it's all said and done, you're going to see Hoskins in the 270s. You're going to see Carlos Santana in the 260s. I think you're going to see Odubel Herrera back above 300. But, you know, they need to get this figured out offensively, because that's really what's killing them. I know the starting pitching took a step back this last time through the rotation, but you're going to have your ebb and flow. But for the most part, they're going to get chances to win, and they've got to kind of get it figured out where they can score 5-6 runs relatively consistently in games. And I think the bullpen, I don't know exactly what you do. You've got this kid with Sir Anthony Dominguez, who has really been phenomenal and has proven to be a multi-inning weapon. And I agree that they haven't just kind of turned over the ninth inning to him. They've kind of used him in where they think the highest leverage situation is going to be. And I think for the most part that's worked. But now they've kind of left themselves open. They've kind of got a mishmash of guys trying to piece the other outs together, and it hasn't really worked here as of late. Hector Neris has struggled. Adam Morgan has struggled. I don't think they're as bad as they've looked the last couple of weeks. Like I said, I still think they're going to hit. But they've also played probably the toughest part of their schedule here. They're playing a lot of teams that are near the top. You would like to see them performing better, but I think they'll get their equilibrium back, and maybe starting tonight against Colorado.
All right, we'll get back to working on your free agency pitch to LeBron, because we know deep down you actually are in charge now.
That's a frightening situation.
What, you didn't properly evaluate LeBron James' talent? I mean, no offense, I could get the custodian over at Wells Fargo to do that.
Just the idea of me having any form of responsibility.
I know. You know what's funny about this business? In all seriousness, people ask you, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And our odds of picking games, when it comes to, we're not any good at it. It's like,
No, it's one of the many, you think you know and you don't know. And the more you think you know, the less you really do. It's pretty amazing.
Sort of the motto of the show, isn't it? All right.
Something
Matt
like
Leon
that, yeah.
From Philadelphia. Yeah, I hope they don't start using that in commercials.
Yeah, please no.
Yeah. Help us, please. Don't do that.
I just don't want Sam Hinkie. Please no. But we'll talk about that next
all
hour.
Right. Well, Harry Mays is going to join us in the final half hour today. We're going to talk more about this and other items dealing with Philadelphia. But the Colangelo thing is as bizarre as it gets. And it's a story that doesn't happen 25 years ago because social media has no relevance 25 years ago. Social media used to be picking up the phone and dialing somebody and saying, how you doing? That's social media. Today, burner phones? Are you kidding me? Oh, my goodness. And then putting items out there for people to see. And, look, there's just no way that all it was her. It can't be. Can't be. All right. Something really terrific happened, I think terrific, happened today. And it deals with the Washington Redskins and, of all people, owner Daniel Snyder. Normally, Daniel Snyder does not get what you would call positive publicity. But today, 25 players who were a part of the replacement team for the 1987 Super Bowl champion Washington Redskins, 31 years later, received their Super Bowl rings today. Now, they had talked for a while with some of the players from that team, Dexter Manley, Darryl Grant, people like that, and they're like, you know what? It's been 31 years. Why not? And Charlie Casserly was there today to present the rings. Well, Casserly has been absolutely locked in on making sure that the replacement players from 87 got the rings. Like, they beat the Cardinals. Okay, they beat the Cardinals. They then beat the Giants. And they beat the Dallas Cowboys on Monday Night Football. Well, the strike was about to end, and the Cowboys, all of them crossed the picket line. Nobody for the Redskins did, and the Redskins replacement players still beat Dallas 13-7. Without the replacement team, the Redskins do not make the playoffs. And, of course, the fact is they did make the playoffs, and once they did, they ended up winning three games. They were able to win the divisional round, the NFC Championship game, and, of course, beat the Broncos in the Super Bowl 42-10. They're not in a position to win the Super Bowl if the replacement guys don't go 3-0. That's probably one of the reasons why, over the years, the players on the team softened up. And Daniel Snyder has always thought, to his credit, look, when somebody does something right, to his credit, he said, look, we have to get these guys rings. The players, by the way, the replacement players, did get a Super Bowl cut. Each player back in 1987 received $27,000 as their Super Bowl cut. So they got something. But, of course, that money's all spent. But the Super Bowl ring, well, that's got some permanence. And that now I think they've been able to right something that was a wrong. Look, this is not pro-union, anti-union, any of that stuff. It had nothing to do with that. The bottom line is that they kept playing the season. And because they kept playing the season, those games counted. Those games counted. Well, because the games counted, they won all three. They were instrumental in them making the playoffs. They don't get to the playoffs without all three wins. So they gave them Super Bowl rings today. Daniel Snyder may do a lot of things that irritate a lot of people. And a lot of Redskins fans, many seem to not have any use for him. But the 25 guys that were there today, and there are, of course, others, but there were 25 that were able to be there today. They did their part to help the team win the Super Bowl. Today, they righted a wrong and they got a ring. Now, is it anti-union to give them a ring? Who cares? The bottom line is they did the work. And there aren't Super Bowl rings available for Doug Williams and Darryl Grant and Timmy Smith and Dexter Manley and that whole group there unless those guys win those three games. They lose any one of the games they're not in. So they get their rings today. It's good. I'm glad. I'm glad it happened. I'm glad Daniel Snyder endorsed it. Again, he gets enough bad publicity as it is. This is good publicity. This is good publicity. All right. Harry Mays still to come in the final half hour today. More on Philly sports. It's in the final half hour. By the way, for the play-by-play call of the day, we're not going to give you like one of the Phillies' hits. That's kind of embarrassing, too.